You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Although Charles James had no formal training in dressmaking, he's regarded as one of America's greatest haute couture designers. An exhibition called Charles James Beyond Fashion that's on view at the Metropolitan Museum of Art through August 10th examines the career and extraordinary work of Charles James, a Londoner who came to New York in 1940 and was renowned in the 40s and 50s for his masterful sculpting of fabric and elaborate ball gowns that defied mid-century glamour. Harold Cota, a curator in charge of the Costume Institute, and Jan Reeder, consulting curator for the Brooklyn Museum Costume Collection at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, join me now to discuss the exhibit. Welcome to our show.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
You.
Charles James didn't have formal training as a dressmaker. Did he have training in design?
You know, he was someone who clearly was an autodidact, at least in the medium in which his career was formed. But he was also very, very sensitive to all aspects of culture. So painting, music, he was very much aware.
Well, what was the standard training for an haute couture dressmaker at the time?
Well, many of the greatest haute couturiers never actually draped cloth. They were great sketchers, something which James was. But they also had incredible studios that had masterful hands that would create the garments for him.
Well, how did he get interested in making dresses? Had he always paid attention to fashion even before he began sewing?
Well, he came from a life of some privilege in England, and he was always exposed to glamorous women. So certainly that trained his eye.
Jan, was his family supportive of this career?
His mother certainly was, but his father was not. His father was a rather strict military man and was not enamored of his son going into a field at, like design.
But as Harold suggested, his connections with wealthy families came from his parents' connection.
Yes. Well, in particular, his mother's. His mother was a wealthy Chicago socialite. Her father had made a great deal of money in Chicago, and so that's so they traveled in the most wealthiest high society of Chicago. In Chicago.
So, if someone asks, "Is Charles James American or British?" He is a mix of both, even from birth.
Yes, even from birth, and he always had his feet on both sides of the Atlantic, so to speak.
He met Cecil Beaton at school. Did that friendship help him in his career?
Yeah, very much. His relationship with Beaton was just pivotal to his career from the very beginning. I think Beaton gave him his first exposure to Vogue, and throughout his career, Beaton was always there at the important moments.
Was he already designing in England?
Yes, he really started. His first designing was in Chicago, making hats, and then he had a brief.
Is that
moment
good training for designing dresses?
It was from his point of view, because he approached all of his work as a sculptor. So his first work designing hats, he did it exactly on the clients' heads. So he saw this his design, and he learned also how to manipulate fabric and stretch it and make it do what he wanted.
Now, Harold, that sculptural side led him to develop his own dress form. How is it different from others?
Well, it was something that he was very serious about, the anatomy of a woman's body. As he said, you know, a woman would come in with her body and she would leave with his. So he liked this idea of transforming the body. On the other hand, he was very, very attuned to the idea of what the natural form is. And so he did research at the Brooklyn Museum, at other museums, to study women's shapes over time. And he came up with what he thought was a Platonic ideal.
Well, he has a certain posture that is not typical of dress forms.
Well, he believed that the dress form should actually reflect the natural anatomy as opposed to this kind of abstraction which 7th Avenue was using. So he said, for example, that there is no waistline that's a straight cut across the body. And so his dress form actually had two arcing shapes over either hip.
There are a number of muslins in the exhibit. What can we learn from them?
Well, James expected that what a student of design would learn is the balancing of grain, his rather audacious technique of transforming fabric from the two dimensions to the three dimensions. As a person who taught himself, he broke all the rules because he didn't realize the rules were there. Or if he knew the rules were there, he didn't care.
Do you think that he was as much a sculptor as he was a dressmaker?
He was even more a sculptor, I think, than he was a dressmaker. Mm-hmm. He didn't care what the fabric wanted to do. He had it do what he wanted it to do.
Jan, although he was an innovator, did he find inspiration in and base his work on historical designs?
Yes, very much so. It's especially evident in the ball gowns that he made between 1946 and 1956. You see a great deal of inspiration from the dresses from the 1870s and 1880s. The drapery and the bustle effect, in particular, corseted bodices.
Rather than looking to Paris and what was going on at that time? Well, of course, he comes here in 1940 when Paris is out of the loop.
That's right. He does.
So that was an opportunity as well, wasn't
yes.
it? Americans couldn't go to Paris to get the latest fashion because of the German occupation.
That is absolutely the case. And I think that James started actually studying at the Brooklyn Museum at the same time that the American women designers were also beginning to have some influence on fashion in the United States. So his historical inspirations were, you know, he looked to historical, but what came from the designs that he created were wholly modern and wholly his own.
And many of these dresses strike me as timeless. I can imagine someone wearing mm-hmm. one of them today and no one thinking that they were from an earlier time.
Right. And that's what I was saying, that you can see the inspiration from the past, but he takes it and makes it a very modernist style.
Well, you said that he studied at the Brooklyn Museum?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did the Brooklyn Museum already have some kind of a costume collection? Is that
they had an important costume collection from that began in around 1928, but it was the design lab that really drew him there. That had a reputation for really supporting industrial designers and fashion designers and there was a very active entity at that point, so that's why he was drawn there to study the clothes and to use their facilities.
And is that why he left his everything to the Brooklyn Museum?
It is, yes. He himself didn't leave the things, but he encouraged all of his important clients to leave their clothes to the Brooklyn Museum, as well as all of the supporting materials such as patterns and sewn muslins, etc.
And then fashion, art, and everything else that was connected
fashion.
To it.
Yes, uh-huh. That's right.
We're talking about an exhibit that's actually at the Metropolitan Museum, but it's in collaboration with the Brooklyn Museum. We'll get into that in a moment. It's called Charles James Beyond Fashion, and it runs through August 10th. Harold, he used the spiral frequently. Can you explain how?
Yes, he loved the three-dimensionality of cloth, the idea that you would just spin it around the body. And so frequently his pattern pieces have no front or back. There's no side seam. There are more diagonals that crisscross from front to back.
Was he
cutting
on the bias?
It's very much like a cubist. Yeah, it was on the bias, but it's not on the pure bias. Rather than designers like Madeleine Vionnet or other people exploited the bias, he was somebody who was really working with the cloth on the body and pinning.
And his taxi dress is iconic. What's it like?
Well, the taxi dress is a real sleight of hand for him in that he had this conceit that the modern woman didn't want to pull a dress over her head or step into it, but rather could unfurl it and with such ease that she could get dressed in the back of a cab. What it really was transiting something from intimate apparel, like a bathrobe, and making it day wear. So it's very audacious in its time.
And the catalog, by the way, it's a gorgeous catalog. says that a James pattern is challenging to understand, not because it's complicated, but because it defies convention. You have to figure out what he was doing, like coming up with a dress that you could put on in a taxi. Well, so many of the names of the dresses are colorful in their own right. The lampshade evening dress, the butterfly ball gown, the lobster dress. He gave them those names?
Some of them he gave when he designed them, but some of the pieces evolved over time. When we're working with Dillard Scofidio, they named one dress the Catrapouf, which we think is a perfect description of one of the gowns.
Now, we also named one which we featured on the Met Web, which we called the Hipster, which has now stuck as well. So,
did he always have his own design studio, or did he work for others?
He always had his own design studio.
And did he design specifically for the clients, or did he come up with an idea and then hope that somebody might like it?
I think it was more often the latter than the former. We hear many different stories about how he worked with clients, but I think that there were certain clients that really inspired him, and that was Millicent Rogers and Austin Hurst. So I think it was it was both, depending on who the client.
His designs are often asymmetrical. That was part of his style.
It was indeed, especially those the spiraling gowns that we were talking about before. They result in an asymmetrical look.
And the seams are spiraling.
Mind-boggling.
They're mind-boggling.
He was also a master of draping and folding. I guess that comes from the sculptural side. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did he do that by hand?
Yes, it's very much a hands-on technique that you see, and that's why it's so difficult to describe. It doesn't conform to the conventions of pattern making.
Well, we have a slideshow on our show page at WNYC.org. People get an idea of what we're talking about. But he often used thicker fabrics like silk fire, taffeta, satin, because they had sculptural qualities?
They have a natural body, and they also play with light in a very specific way. And he loved that kind of play of velvet, which would suck in the light against something like a satin.
And then he would do something very simple and then end it with a big poof from the knees down. So they look almost classically simple, and then suddenly they have this startling element to them.
Yes, that's the drama of the contrast, I think, in those. He did three specifically like that. They're very tight-fitting, body-conscious shes, and then these great whoosh of flounce at the bottom of them. And he wrote quite a bit about those and the intricacy of how to apply those flounces so that they had exactly the right movement and the right relation to the floor that he wanted.
Among the highlights of the exhibit are the cloverleaf ball gowns, the butterfly ball gown. Do you look at any of them as his masterpieces, or are they all pretty terrific?
I think with the gowns, they're all pretty terrific in that they're all so distinctive, one from the other. Mm-hmm. In terms of his body of work, there are very body-conscious, liquid dresses that are equal masterworks.
Mm-hmm. Now, he also was influenced by the art of the day, surrealism.
Yes.
Aren't there almost surrealist dresses, like the lobster dress?
Yeah, that is the most obvious, for sure. It has the look, many people look at it and has the look of a crustacean because of this sort of this spine down the front of it to which these many upward tucks are taken. So that is the most surreal. But there are many other examples.
Well, the biomorphism.
The biomorphism. The fans. Everyone, look, there are two feather fans in the show that people look at and say, what are those? And then when you explain that it's his take on this traditional feather fan, he makes them into bird wings. I think that's a very surrealist
transposition.
Well, these things were meant to be worn.
Oh, absolutely.
Sometimes you see haute couture dresses that look like they're just meant to make a point. Mm-hmm. But how do they stand up?
Well, they were intended very specifically for clients, and so they were worn to events, but it was another time, and there was the occasion to be able to dress up that way.
Right. I think they didn't wear them very frequently.
They're all hand-stitched, which makes them even more frail.
Yes, right.
In the exhibit, there were cameras that scanned many of the ball gowns. Can you talk about how you use technology to get the sophisticated views of the dresses?
Yes, you know, when you look at one of these gowns, what you see is the topography, the sort of sculptural quality. But what's so interesting to a contemporary viewer, I think, is how is it made? What is it about its structure that allows it to have these extraordinary silhouettes? And so we worked with the designers of the exhibition, and they've come up with analytical digital representations.
So we look at the dress, and then we see on a video screen how the dress was actually constructed.
Yes.
And often it's very surprising.
Yes.
Now, Jan, just one more thing. How did these dresses come into the museum collection? They were donated to the Brooklyn Museum, and the Brooklyn Museum has done Charles James shows in the past, but now we have this major show at the Met running, as I said, through August 10th.
Mm-hmm.
Has the Brooklyn Museum given them to the Met?
Yes. In 2009, the entire Brooklyn Museum collection was transferred to the Metropolitan Museum, to the Costume Institute. So along with that entire collection, which was about 25,000 objects, of course, came this wonderful treasure of the Charles James material.
And often when paintings and sculptures are given to the museum, the conservation department has to go over them before they're put on exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
Did the same sort of thing have to be done here?
Oh, indeed.
Yes, very much so.
Yes,
our conservator uses the term inherent vice. He used such extraordinary fabrics, but intrinsic to their creation is a kind of self-destructive property, especially in the chiffons. And because of that, there were months and months and months of conservation that had to be applied.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned the catalog, which is distributed by Yale University Press, just one of the most beautiful books ever printed. Must have been hard getting these colors exactly right. But
we have a very talented editorial department, of course, and we worked frequently with them to get the colors exactly right.
Well, thank you both so much for being on our show to talk about this Charles James exhibit. And Charles James, a great designer who is not as well known as Chanel or Dior, Yves Saint Laurent, but I get the sense you feel deserves to be as well known.
Absolutely.
Was he as influential?
Yes,
certainly.
We're seeing more and more people also commenting on how they see his influence in subsequent fashion. So, indeed, you would
he's
agree
a designer's
with that.
Designer.
Yeah.
My guests have been Jan Reeder, consulting curator for the Brooklyn Museum Costume Collection at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and Harold Cota, curator in charge of the Costume Institute. We've been talking about an exhibit that runs through August 10th called Charles James Beyond Fashion. Just beautiful, and the catalog is beautiful as well. And I thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you.
You.
It's a pleasure.